Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, I'm really happy to have another master that I met while I was in Boston just a few weeks ago. Her name is Joanna Scaparotti, and I am just really enjoying the Italian last names that I've been learning. Joanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And it's wonderful to have you. And I would really love to hear your Reiki story from the very beginning. How did you hear about Reiki? When was it? What did you think about it in the beginning? So on.
Okay.
All right.
So interesting thinking back. So I was going to see an acupuncturist in the late 90s. So I think 1998. And she had a Reiki master in her office. And she recommended that I see him. So that was my first experience. His name is Tony Reese. He's now out in Santa Fe, I believe. But he gave me my first couple of sessions, and they were amazing, powerful, just kind of life-changing, just, you know, the amount of just insight and healing that happened in those sessions. And he had said to me, I think you'll be doing something with Reiki someday. And I think at the time I was probably 22. Uh-huh. So I'm like, okay, maybe, who knows? You know, just out of college in my high-tech career and really didn't know much about that. You know, I wasn't on that path yet.
Right.
And then fast forward about 5 years, and I was spending a lot of time up in Vermont. So I think 2003 or so, and I was up there over a winter. And I ended up taking a first level class with a teacher up there. Her name was Sierra Thayer. And it was really amazing. I really was excited about it. And at that point, it felt really like coming home. It just really resonated with me. So I was practicing on myself. And then a few months later, while I was still up there, I took the Reiki 2 class. And then I spent a few years, so another three years or so, just practicing on family and friends. And over that time, I found myself doing more and more Reiki, more and more just helping other people. I was on my own wellness journey at that point. Actually, why I was seeing the acupuncturist in the first place was for food allergies. I was really sick as a teen and in my early 20s. And so she was helping me start to bring my body back into balance. And then I was studying at Clayton College of Natural Health, all different kinds of healing modalities in order to learn how to heal my own body. And so the Reiki came into play when I studied that. Was during that time I was doing the other studies. And it all came together. And, so it was kind of interesting. It really supported me in that healing that I needed to do.
Uh-huh. Sounded like you had really severe food allergies.
I did. Yes.
Wow.
And I still have some of them, but it seems like these days there are more people with more food allergies than I have, you know, when it comes to gluten and, you know, all kinds of things out there. So I know a lot of people who have interesting food challenges. And one of my total side hobbies is just cooking and baking and finding allergy free meals.
Uh-huh. Great.
Signing up for people. Yeah.
Yeah. Wild.
So, and I had needed a lot of healing because that was a really emotionally difficult time to be 14 and not be able to eat certain foods, and nobody in my family really understood the food allergies.
Right.
So, you know, by the time I started to feel better, like mid 20s, I felt I had to do some emotional healing. So let's see, where was I? So I spent a few years studying, you know, just practicing on my own with, I had another friend who had taken Reiki, and we practiced a lot on each other, practiced a lot on my family. And I wanted to go further to the Reiki master, but my teacher, who I had done the 1 and 2 classes with, was no longer in Vermont. And so I couldn't find her. And I had a friend through a spiritual organization that I was a part of who was a Reiki master teacher, still is, and she's in Richmond, Virginia. And I had a different kind of training with her, more like an apprenticeship, over a period of time where we would talk on the phone and email, and she would say, go try this. And then I'd come back to her and give her some feedback and ask questions, and kind of, it was more like an apprenticeship.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
Yeah, so I was just kind of practicing over a long period of time, and then I did eventually go and spend some time with her in Virginia, since I'm up here in Massachusetts, and then, you know, finished, she did the Reiki Master Attunement with me, and she said, I think you're going to teach. And I said, oh, okay, I don't know, we'll see. And then, you know, I had another year or so, I finished that early 2006, and then another year or so, year and a half, and I started just kind of doing some of the Reiki teaching with my friends and family. And then students just started coming to me. And so I didn't really intend to teach, but I feel like I've just been really called to it. Like, I don't have a choice. They just keep showing up.
Exactly. It sounds very much like Reiki.
Yes. You know, and I think I really was inspired by how she had taught me over time. But being here in the Boston area, most people here, you know, we have a certain personality in New England. You know, we're kind of busy all the time and we like things structured and all that. So I instead of doing kind of an open-ended apprenticeship like she had done with me, I looked at how can I actually take some of the skills I learned in my undergrad going into a high-tech career, which wasn't for me, and really kind of take what she taught me and put it into like a little bit more systemized and a little bit more of a curriculum that would work for the people that were coming to me so that I could say, you know what, we're going to have a number of classes and this is what we're going to learn. So I could give them kind of a structure because that seemed, for the people here, that seems to work really well. And so I just started doing that. And for two or three years, I was teaching, you know, just Reiki 1 and Reiki 2. And then I had students saying, we're ready for Reiki Master. Can you do that? And so I put them off for a little while. And then I did decide to start. And I put together, again, kind of a curriculum based on everything I had learned from my teacher. And we did an apprenticeship, you know, over 6 months where they were practicing and coming into class and going home and practicing on themselves, going home and practicing on other people. And it's just kind of evolved in the last 4 years from that. And so now I'm teaching all the time.
Wow.
And it's actually that's what I do for a living right now. That's what pays my bills.
Wow, good for you.
So it's kind of wild, yeah. And it's just always there with me, you know, and I really see it, Reiki, as a practice, like a yoga practice. It's something you need to do every day. So I really try to impart that.
Uh-huh. So while we were talking just in the very, very short time that we got to connect, I mentioned something about having spaces available for students, well, vaguely on a daily basis. And you said that you were doing that. So I'm really interested in that piece.
Yeah.
From you.
So in addition to what I do with the teaching, I had a vision for a wellness center and I opened that the same year. Actually, I started teaching Reiki Master 2009. And I have a center called the Healing Center here in my town in Beverly. And one of the things that we started doing fairly, quickly was I started having Reiki shares for my students to come and practice. And not too long into it, we started doing it every week. So every Monday, so for the last probably 3 years now, we have a Reiki share every Monday. We have some meditation circle every Wednesday, which is great kind of practice for students to kind of quiet their minds and get into that space. And then we've started adding more Reiki shares when we can, and also some other meditation sittings too, where, you know, and it's open to my students, but it's also open to the community. And so I do get a lot of other Reiki practitioners who just need or want a space to practice. So we're not up to every day yet because I don't have enough space, but that's actually something I'm hoping for in the new year is a bigger space and being able to offer that on a daily basis.
Uh-huh. Wow.
There's so many people who want to practice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And so it's been great because I, you know, there's enough of a community that, you know, I don't have to always be the one that's holding the space.
Right.
So I've been in grad school this past 2 years, and so I don't have as much time as I did. But I've, you know, I've got this great community of Reiki Masters, some of my former students, just others from the community. And so there's always somebody to hold the space. So we always have at least that one, you know, that Monday night share. And then, you know, we keep adding to it.
Great. Good for you. So what are you getting your master's in? I'm interested.
Oh, I'm getting an MBA.
An MBA. Oh, my gosh. That's great. Okay, tell me about how you ended up there.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, with having this healing center here in Beverly, I have this bigger vision. So I created this business model where all of the staff that do all kinds of wellness stuff, massage and herbalist, you know, nutrition, therapists, yoga teachers, all of that, but they're all self-employed and just really holistic and heart-centered. And I have this kind of big vision or this bigger calling that in order for business in general, you know, in this country to be less icky, we need more heart-centered people, you know, doing business and finding ways to do business and make a living comfortably doing business. And so, you know, after having my center open for a couple of years, you know, I realized there were definitely some skills I needed to learn in order to take my vision bigger.
Yes.
To more people. So I in the spring of 2012, I started an MBA program.
Wow.
And I'll be finishing up in the spring of 2014. So, you know, and I think one of the things that I like to pass on, what also came out of teaching my Reiki students was them saying, you know what, I really want to do this for work. So how did you get your practice up and going? How is this supporting you? And so I started sharing the business skills that I had kind of cobbled together on my own. And so I include that in some of my training, and I include that a lot with my staff that work at my center. And then, you know, with the MBA, I've been able to apply and learn so much more and be able to apply it to the work in the wellness field.
Wow, I'm in awe. I think that's great. Well, you know, I used to do, in my years of being in Reiki, I used to do a lot of different programs, things that I felt would be relevant to people out there. And I had a dear friend of mine, he's now passed on, and he and I, because of my own need for doing this for myself, I thought this would be a great idea for students and people who wanted to be more business-like, so to speak, in their Reiki practice, because you can't always make business decisions totally by heart, because sometimes you need to be able to add up your bills and pay them also.
Mm-hmm.
So we started a program called The Business of You.
Mm.
And it was really great. We did it through intentions, and we had them have an intention for their life and then work with them for about 3 weeks or a month, one 4-day weekend, and then we did we monitored them over a period of weeks, where they could find out for themselves whether their dream was really possible. And it was a really successful program, and I really loved it, and it was something that I could put all of me into, because, you know, I also went I didn't graduate like you did, but I went through partly a business program, an MBA program myself, and then he was a CPA. And so between the two of us, we had enough of that kind of know-how, and then I just put it into a workshop. So it was really neat, and it is so needed these days because, for obvious reasons, and I'm really happy to hear that you did something about it.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's not something I set out to do necessarily, but Reiki just guides me, I think. You know, it came to me, and it just keeps guiding me where to go next. And, and I love that, you know, about it. And I love being able to balance that piece, you know, of trusting in the heart and being guided by Reiki, being guided by spirit, and then also the practical side of, now what do I need to do to pay the bills?
Right.
This business running.
Exactly. And wonderful.
Be able to balance that And yeah, it's powerful. And I've actually found this past year and a half that I've been in grad school, the more I'm doing that intellectual work, the more I need to be doing Reiki to keep me balanced. You know, that's where some of those additional Reiki shares and things like that have come, because I just need to be in it more to stay grounded, I think, you know, and stay grounded in my heart.
Well, that's a great thing to be able to try to balance these two parts of you. Yeah, great. And so what is your impression of the way that Reiki is working in the world right now, as far as, you know, you seem like, let's see, maybe I should start this again.
Okay.
Well, in my life of traveling around the Reiki world, there are people that I have met whose stories are very similar to yours. You know, it's not something they had planned. It's not something they maybe even wanted to do, but somehow Reiki just brought a public practice to them, and then brought students, and then, you know, there was no escaping what was happening.
Right.
And I find that to be really interesting, because some people try so hard to have what you have and don't seem to be able to manage it. And I'm always looking for the secret formula, so to speak. And I haven't figured out any, except that Reiki just guides us where we're supposed to be. And it's good to know how to accept that guidance, I guess. But I don't know. Do you have something that you tell your students? Because obviously they are inspired by you and would like to have, you know, a lot of the same capabilities that you have.
Well, I think it probably, I would say, you know, what I tell people and what I follow for me is, it's a lot of it's about trusting the process, trusting Reiki, you know, and kind of getting your ego out of the way so that you can, you know, be in the flow of it. And when it comes to, for example, just working for yourself or running a business, there's no sense of security like kind of people with mainstream jobs have this sense of security. I don't really believe it's as secure as they believe it is, but they just sort of think everything lines up and so they're secure and safe. And so it's really scary to be self-employed or running a business, and you never know where your students or your clients or where the income's going to come from.
Right.
You can't plan it all out. But if you approach that from a fearful place, you don't get very far. You don't take the steps and the risks to do it. But I like to look at it from the other perspective, is that because I don't know where it's coming from, it could be so much better than I could imagine. And so I leave it open, you know, to Reiki, to the universe, to whatever's out there to bring me, you know, what I need to be doing. And so instead of needing to plan out every detail, you know, instead I'm open to the adventure of it. So I think it's that, you know, being able to let go of the fear and to see that when you don't know what's coming, it could actually be really good instead of bad.
Right. Well, they're great points, because I also have that feeling. And one of the things that I find really important to remember is not to make assumptions about what other people are going to do. I think that is something that I've learned over the years in living my life very similarly to yours, looking what's going on, what's working, and supporting that, and being able to let go of those great ideas that I have, but sometimes they don't work out. And it's just Reiki, for me, it's just Reiki saying to me, well, you know, it's not the time for this right now. Or, you know, this is your bright idea, but actually other people aren't really interested.
Right. Now's not the time for this yet.
Yes, right. There's another time for this in another place. And I find that to be... when I get to that point, letting go is really easy. But I see for some people, they have a perspective of trying to lead what they feel like Reiki should be doing rather than following Reiki. And and there's a, it's a really subtle difference, I find.
That's a lot. Well, I would say that's a key concept that I try to teach my students starting right in Reiki 1, that Reiki is about being able to like go within, to listen, to get out of the way, and to follow. So we're not making it happen. We're not making the healing happen. We're not deciding how the healing is going to happen. But, you know, our jobs are to get out of the way and then to allow, you know, like that idea of like surrendering to the process. And so even from in a self practice, you know, starting there, it kind of shifts your whole perspective, you know, and how you go through your day, even if you're just Reiki 1 and it's something you do for yourself. So I think, you know, I think trying to make it go where you want it to go, you're getting in the way.
Right.
Of it, you know. Yeah. And so I think it flows better when you're able to get out of the way and to allow.
Uh-huh. So I know that it's really easier said than done.
True. That's why it's a daily practice. Uh-huh. That's why I think it should be. And so that's, I encourage my students, you know, to really make it a part of their day, a part of their lives. And I would say the kind of thinking back to what you had asked me about sort of the key to having this kind of life, I think the other piece of it is that daily practice and, you know, taking care of my body, taking care of my energy, my spirit, all of that. You know, I see in order to show up and teach Reiki or in order to show up and give a Reiki session or just show up for my center, I need to be full is kind of how I like to see it. One of my friends said that to me once, like, I need my energy to be full, uh-huh. my happiness to be full so I can show up and be of service. And so I feel like it's part of my job to make sure I'm taking very good care of myself so that I can do that. So uh-huh. if you get too focused on fear or money or what any of those other things, it can distract you. And, you know, you don't end up showing up kind of in that space of being full. And I know in my experience, the way the Reiki guides me is if I am not taking care of myself, I'm getting stressed out, all of a sudden my students start canceling or rescheduling and like my schedule just magically clears so I can go home and rest. Like it seems inevitable. It happens that way. So it just kind of, it's like a built-in process, I think. So it comes when you're ready for it. And if you're not full and able to show up and fully be present and listen and be of service, then you don't, those opportunities don't come.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe you're not able to see them.
Right. And it is really scary to surrender your life to something that basically is unknown.
Yeah. My perspective has always been that that's more interesting than it being exactly what I want, because then there's no surprises.
Right.
And I'm not sure I fully know, you know, in some ways it's been harder for me to say, like, to know exactly what I want for me other than, you know, being healthy and happy. But, you know, how I'm being of service in the world is way more interesting to just show up and allow an opportunity to come that's interesting and that I hadn't planned ahead.
Right.
To have my whole life laid out.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, there's quite a few people in Reiki who who would like to plan it, and it's so difficult to give them an idea of how to go into the fear and be able to really live on that line sometimes and have it be exciting rather than fearful.
Right.
So I don't know, do you have some, you know, magic potion that you use for your students or for your clients or?
Well, a mentor of mine once said that fear and excitement are the same physiological response in the body. And so it's a matter of perspective.
Uh-huh.
And how you look at it. So I do like to pass that on because I found that to be really helpful for me, you know, in launching all of this. So I actually, in 2008, I went through a divorce and moved back up here to the North Shore, Massachusetts, and kind of started over from scratch in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so that's when I dove in and decided I'm going to open the center and I'm going to start my business and be self-employed and really dove into it. And, you know, but I was in a panic for a little while after the divorce because I had this like kind of clean slate and blank page.
Right.
I don't know what to do. And so I worked with this mentor for a little while. And when, you know, I think one of the key things that she imparted was that, you know, that you could see this feeling in your body as fear, or maybe you could embrace it as excitement and use that to fuel the steps you take.
Right.
Moving forward. And I think that, you know, that definitely helped me get through the fear just in general of starting life over again, you know, at 32 and then, being able to start a business and all of that. So now when, you know, because there's always challenges and things that come up running my own business and having my own practice. And so when that fear comes up, I try to, you know, look at it and be like, okay, how can I turn my perspective on this around and embrace it and use it to fuel me to the next thing instead of hold me back?
Right, right. Fabulous. Really fabulous.
I think it gets easier the more you practice it. Just like anything else, practice makes it easier.
Yes, definitely. It does get easier. But it doesn't, I don't think the, well, anyway, for me, I haven't experienced it this like, okay, am I just being stupid or am I supposed to trust here? This question. And sometimes, you know, it's really good for me anyway to ask that question because it reminds me, oh, right, I remember what happened the last time I was in this situation.
Mm.
And it gives me a sense of taking just a little second or even a few days to remember, oh, right, I was here before, it worked out, everything's fine, just get a few Reiki treatments and, you know, things will be better.
Yep.
And sometimes people say, you know, it just is amazing how optimistic you are. And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm optimistic or just willing to accept what life is bringing me.
Mm.
And that's been an interesting question lately because I've had some really dynamic conversations of, you know, is this optimism or denial or
right?
So anyway, it's just a fascinating process for us all because in these days of what are called sort of economic down days, I find that they actually help people discover what is important for them.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Because, you know, I go into shopping malls and I'm sorry, I still see a lot of cars and a lot of people at the cash registers.
Yep.
And it's just amazing. Whether it's the bank's money or personal money, it doesn't, there's something that's kind of trying to heal, I think, on a societal level, especially in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
About the use of money and about the use of what we think is a socially appropriate job or, you know, whatever those things are that people want to deal with. Do you feel that too?
I think so, yeah. I think there's been a shift in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. How long has it been since the economic crash that we had? But yeah, I think people, when people feel that sense of security, they don't question a lot of the things that they do. You know, the new car and then, you know, just the expenditures and all that. But then when things got shaken up, people started to go within and really figure out what's most important. Because if I have to be more careful with my money and invest my money or my energy, you know, into things, I want to make sure they're important to me. And I think that's a positive thing.
Yes,
and
me too.
A lot of people, you know, had to make that shift.
I do too. And it's not been easy, but it's been, I think, really good for us all, including myself. I have to, you know, think about, okay, is this really what I want to do here?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me more conscious, like having decided this instead of habitually doing something, but going, okay, am I going out to dinner? Why am I going out to dinner? Is it really necessary?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is, because it's just the thing that I really need in that moment to go someplace or to relive a memory or to honor something that's happening, or, you know, there's lots of different reasons for what I do, but to be more thoughtful about it is important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and it's like where, because money is just energy, you know, and so it's where you're invest. I like to think of all of it as like where you're investing your energy. And is it something that's going to be positive and bring you back what you really want and need or not? And that's where you're just making that conscious choice. And I think kind of back to what you were saying about the optimism or denial, I think it's a choice too. It's just a choice of perspective, you know, and I think we attract the things into our life that we expect to see or that we're, you know, I remember reading something or someone saying, you know, just, you know, there's so much sensory input, you know, visually as we go throughout our lives that we filter out a lot of stuff. And so we filter out what we don't want to see or we know about or that we don't know is there. So we see what we want to see. We experience what we want to experience so we can cultivate that, you know, and create the opportunities that we want instead of, I don't know, fearing the worst and then kind of seeing those fearful things happen because that's all we're looking for.
Right, right.
So I think it's a choice, a lot of it.
Great. Well, I think your students and Reiki and the world are really lucky that you chose to, that you chose to take a Reiki class and then chose to surrender to whatever Reiki brought you. I think that's great. So tell me, because your show will be aired at the beginning of January.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, what are the things that you're, I don't know if the word dreaming is politically correct now after our after our conversation, but what are your dreams for this year and for your work? And do you have things out there that you're going for?
Yeah, definitely. I'm hoping to grow the healing center, my business, into a bigger space in the new year. I think I'm really ready to take that leap and be able to have more staff and more things going on a regular basis instead of it's shared space right now. So, you know, there's only so many hours in a day and all of that. So
right.
I'm looking for space. And I really feel ready to take that leap, you know, especially as I'm coming to the end of my graduate program. I'm going to have some more time and energy and focus to make that transition. So I'm looking forward to that.
Great.
And, you know, and just really using everything that I learned in my MBA to see what I can do to grow and make it, you know, make what I'm doing just a bigger piece of the community. Because I really see what with Reiki and with what I do with my center, yes, there's parts of it that are about making a living, but a lot of it's about being of service and making a living through being of service. So, you know, if we're in a bigger space, there are more things we can do to offer for the community as well. So I do, I try to do a lot of volunteering where I can, in town where my business is and get my staff involved in that as well. So, you know, I just feel like the bigger we are, the bigger resource we are, the more we can contribute.
So what kind of service do you do? I'm interested.
Well, lately I've been involved with, there's an organization called Beverly Main Streets. So they're not, you know, their goal is to support the downtown businesses. And I think there are main streets in every city. This organization, it's a nonprofit. And the idea is to just get people out, get people downtown, create more of a sense of community. So I've been volunteering with them quite a bit, just to kind of create a sense of community in, you know, within the business owners in our town. And then also, you know, the different ways that we then collaborate and, you know, we'll support some of the other nonprofit organizations, throughout the town. You know, like recently we did an event for Veterans Day, just, you know, offering our services to veterans in the area. you know, in gratitude for their service and, you know, just finding different ways to try to be involved with what's happening here.
Well, that sounds great. And how do you intend, like, can you give me an example of how you would use your MBA in supporting growing your business?
Okay, let's see.
Besides keeping better books or...
Okay, so the last class I took that just finished up this semester was about innovation and creativity in a business and how to create a culture of that. And I thought that was really fascinating. And, you know, the professor consults with big Fortune, you know, 1,000 companies on innovation. So he's in it and he has great insights. And so one of the things he gave us was you know, there are these different elements that go into creating a really innovative, open environment. And, you know, some of those things include, you know, employee support and recognition and creating this culture where you can be culture of openness within the workplace. And then also, you know, the more practical things of having a system and a way of tracking, you know, the success of projects. But, you know, one of the things, even though the people that work with me, my staff at my center, are not employees, they're self-employed. But one of my goals with this business is to try to make it a place where we work together, we're collaborative, we're a community, we're a team, even if, you know, it's a different financial setup than an employee workplace. So there were, you know, one of the projects, I try to do as many projects for class as I can on my business. So one of the projects was, you know, doing an innovative leadership agenda is what they called it. So what can leadership do to change and make your company more innovative? You know, and so I was able to look at the strengths of the Healing Center and look at the areas that need work. And, you know, one of the things that we don't have that I haven't done before is this idea of like recognition. You know, whereas maybe you work in a different company, there's different ways of recognizing the staff for their contributions. And things like that.
Right.
And so in the new year, I want to be, you know, adding some ways of doing that. And I've been, you know, I got some ideas when I did that project. And then in the new year at our next staff meeting, I want to introduce, you know, one of the ideas that we had come up with was this idea of like a colleague award where the one colleague, you know, kind of gets this award for the month, which is given to them by someone else who thinks they did something outstanding during the month before. And so it's just a way for us to recognize each other.
Cool.
You know, in the work we do, because it can be, you know, it can be hard being self-employed. And so that's great to be able to come together as a team and be recognized by your peers.
Absolutely. You know,
that you've taken a risk and you've tried something and, you know, whether it worked or not, I think it's about giving it a try.
Well, you know, one of the things that has come up in some people's lifestyle of being wanting of allowing Reiki to be their soul. No, let me try again.
Okay.
One of the characteristics of our Reiki practice often is that we don't actually we very rarely actually see the end product. Like when you build a house, you're a carpenter. You end up seeing that the house is finished and built, right?
Yeah.
And up to code, and somebody comes and says, yes, this is good. And the owners pay you, and, you know, in theory, you have recognition from a lot of different places.
Right.
Whereas people come in for, you know, 4 days of Reiki treatment or something, and they might leave and never tell you 3 months later how they got that these four treatments basically save their life, right? Because sometimes it doesn't happen so clear with so much clarity,
right?
And so to build in recognition in what you know in the way that you're thinking about is really a neat idea because we all need recognition. I mean, we can call it ego, but in truth, you know, we're all human beings, right? So we all need to know that our work is making a difference.
Yeah.
And it's not about you're the best Reiki practitioner. It's about you made a difference today in somebody's life. Like to be able to say, wow, I saw the face of that person going out of our office. And, you know, they don't know. They might not know it, but I know that you made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, and so that, then that's something, you know, that came out of the MBA that's maybe a little more interesting than, like you said, the books, which are important too. But, you know, it's definitely, there are, you know, some neat ideas in this program that I'm at, that it's, you know, it's, they're really focused on kind of 21st century businesses and looking ahead to 2020, the year 2020, and like it's kind of this global world now, and global business is global. And so, you know, a lot of old management practices are no longer apply, and it's looking into how do you work with the younger generation, the millennials, that have a very different global perspective because they grew up with the internet.
Exactly.
And instantaneous.
I agree. And are you one of these people that grew up with the internet?
No.
Really?
So when I did my undergrad in computer science, the internet was like just kind of going in the 90s.
Oh, in the 90s, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were younger than you are.
No, I know. I do often come across as younger, but so my computer science training was pre-internet.
Really?
It was. Wow. It was all desktop applications.
Wow, so. That's incredible.
So.
Okay, let me just get over that shock.
Yeah. Because that was when it first came, you know, it didn't really boom until maybe 10 years ago.
Well, that's true when you think about it, really.
But this rate of change has been, you know, enormous.
Enormous. Very enormous. Well, you know, this has always been one of my great conundrums. You know, even in the 1980s, already Reiki was international, right?
Yep.
So we were trying to do international conferences and for Reiki masters and gatherings, you know, and wanting to connect people, you know, in different parts of the world and so on. But, you know, to go to an accountant here in the United States and say, well, this is what I do and this is how I'm traveling and so on. They could give me IRS standards for, you know, how much I could be out of the country and not pay, mm-hmm. I don't know, offshore tax rates, which are really high and
right.
So on. So I had to deal with all that. But the interesting part was trying to do publicity. Like, of course, in those days, it was all by mail. Right? Like post office mail.
Mm-hmm.
So we had these gigantic mailing bills, you know, and then you have to deal with street addresses being printed wrong or them being not current. And I mean, there were all kinds of interesting issues around doing international business that actually have become non-issues.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years, which is just kind of boggled my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it just puts everything in a different light, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that are happening in the business world these days as a result of that?
Well, I think this sort of brought to mind, I got to take a trip last March to Mexico City and do a business class there. So for one of my classes, instead of taking it here, I got to do this week-long class in Mexico City with students from all around the world.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it was really neat. And it was about the emerging marketplaces, the countries that are emerging, I guess, from the third world into, you know, having viable marketplaces globally. It's really interesting that some of the things that they were talking about where how things like the internet and cell phones are getting out to places and people are getting on the internet before they get plumbing or even electricity.
Right, exactly.
And so it's pretty amazing how then there's this whole pool of ideas, right? So you're actually getting to tap into these people and their ideas where they've never been able to reach before. So it's amazing how global, you know, the workplace is. And one of the, I guess it was this innovation class, they were looking at, forget which company it was, but one of the big, maybe it was Procter & Gamble, one of the big companies that produces, you know, just consumer products. They actually tap into a global network for products and inventions because they need to innovate so much that they can't do it all in-house anymore. Like, the world's small enough now because of the way we can access and connect with people that they can actually work with people who are very remote or rural or, you know, in places where they maybe never would have been able to connect with them before. So it's really fascinating, actually, at just how small the world is becoming.
That
business can really happen, and ideas be generated and, you know, sharing information. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, even in the next 10 years, what changes.
Right, right. Well, a part of me can't wait, and another part of me just goes, oh, no, now what do I have to change?
Right?
Because like it or not, I'm becoming an old fogey in some way. And and it's been fascinating because 2 years ago, I just had to do something different in, for instance, in registering people for events, because I do events and people come from all over. I'm so amazed how a person who hears about something that I'm doing in Hong Kong just is called to do this work. And yeah. I would have never predicted it. I mean, that's right. Not on one of my predictor scales of where my market is, right?
Right.
So what I decided was that I had to do an online registration thing where I could send all the material out all at one time by email and have it networked by email so that people could register by email and not incur the slow mailing process or email and then, you know, figure out a way to accept payments online and so on. So it's all done in this one service that I buy. And that in and of itself is an interesting thing because there are interesting side notes to this. Like, the company that I'm working with right now is American. And the interesting thing is they're not very internationally oriented. So I now have to get them to be internationally oriented, or I have to find another service because,
right.
You know, like, for instance, they have a really hard time taking foreign addresses because they don't program foreign, you know, enough space for foreign addresses,
right.
Which I think is really goofy.
And especially in this day and age. In this day and age, it's a global marketplace.
I know. So it's like, hello.
Yeah.
So it's just a very, very interesting time of juxtaposition. Like, I see that their thinking and their programmers and everything are going for an American market. And they expect everybody to fit into that market. And that's old thinking.
Right, exactly.
Like, everything now is American. You know, the American dollar has to be the going thing. And this may be heresy, but I like to honor other people's currency. And I have to be paid in American dollars. But if I'm doing a workshop in Germany, then I need to be paid in euros because that's where all my expenses are being paid. And that's what I have to pay in is euros.
Right.
So it's like they don't allow me to put the amount that's for, you know, that's for the fee for the event in euros. It has to be in American dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm positive there's a company out there that's internationally oriented that would work with you.
Yeah, I'm sure
this
there
one
is.
Doesn't decide to catch up.
Yeah, well, what I find though is that it kind of follows my own head. It's like I wouldn't get it unless I was doing what I'm doing, and I think the Reiki community, it's my experience that our Reiki community is really pushing the envelope because of the speed at which Reiki has spread around the world, but also because of how connected we are.
Yep. Yeah, I believe that. And you know, in some ways, I think, you know, just like our ability to do, you know, Reiki at a distance, it's like the world has caught up to us.
Exactly.
Over a distance at this, you know, simultaneously. But that's a concept we've been aware of for as long as, you know, Reiki's been around.
Right. Exactly.
So it's interesting. It's definitely, I think a lot is going to change in these next 10 years. So if you're able to be open to it, just embrace it. Go with it, you know, just ride.
Okay, ride. Well, I may have to call you and get a few cheerleading sessions.
Yeah.
Great. So I don't know if there were other dreams or other objectives that you had. I kind of jumped in and took over the ones that really connected with me, but maybe there's others because we're just at the end of our show and I'd like for people to be able to connect with those if there are some.
Well, just the last thing I would say, my biggest, you know, bigger vision is wanting to take this business model that I've created that's really, I think, Reiki inspired of individuals working together, collaborating, but in a business model that works and helps people, you know, live their lives. And I want to be able to take that and bring that to other places, other parts of the country. Right now I have in mind maybe of kind of the franchise option because that's the model that we have right now, although I know a lot of people have icky feelings about that word. But being able to just take this system that I've tried and developed and, you know, that's kind of my longer term goal, 10 years maybe, and be able to really bring that to other groups of people and say, here's a way of doing business that seems to work. So here's a starting point for you to come together and create a team and work together, but in a way that's very empowering for everybody. So that's my bigger vision.
That's great. And, you know, we do need another word other than French.
Yes, I know.
So maybe in the next couple of years, you'll figure that word out.
Yes, exactly.
But actually, I think the whole business model needs a new word.
Yes.
It's interesting. Just in the, there's a really good restaurant here who tried franchising and it was, you know, for me, it was a failure because they didn't set it up in a way for them to have, or maybe they didn't want to have control over the actual end product. Mm. So their franchises have not done as well because they're not even comparable with the original restaurant.
Right. Oh, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate because I'd like not to have to drive into Tucson. But on the other hand, I'm willing. Because that's where the food is, right?
The quality is, yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of the things about franchises that I think is a really good, something to really, you know, mull over. And especially when you're talking about working in the social networks of people and health networks, there's some issues, obviously, pro and con for health networks that are, quote, franchising or, you know, huge corporations. But we must be able to fit into this, be able to somehow create something that works in that model, but that really takes care of this quality issue.
Yes, it's important.
Yeah, it's very important. And I think that that's actually a very key question underlying the Reiki community today because there are so many different ways of teaching Reiki and having Reiki come into one's life that there are all these kind of conversations about, you know, a right way to do Reiki and a wrong way to do Reiki and so on. But underneath it, it's like, I haven't created franchises, as I might put it, but it's kind of like that when I initiate a master.
Right. Yeah.
And I have no control over that master. They either choose by themselves to follow my teaching or they don't.
Right.
And they choose to follow my advice or they don't.
Yeah, right. And
that's the nature of mastery. So, yeah. You know, in this whole thing, you know, we're looking at how do we create somehow an ability to pass this on and pass on somehow integrity and quality and values.
Well, and I would say just kind of what popped up for me as you were saying that is that this idea of kind of it's in the training process and the principles, you know, kind of teaching the principles and maybe not just Reiki principles, but in general, a principles-based training where, you know, you're kind of setting up what's going to be in integrity and teaching people how to stay in integrity. So then hopefully from there, they're able to continue to pass that on.
Right.
Rather than maybe just content or just attunements or just the fun, exciting stuff.
Right.
But also instilling the principles. And that's where I think with the way that I teach and really trying to instill a practice and help and having people connecting with themselves and connecting with the Reiki on a daily basis is going to help them stay in integrity.
Right.
And they really have to be willing to do that work to continue training with me,
right?
Because I won't take somebody who just wants a certificate on the wall. I won't take somebody into my Reiki Master apprenticeship unless they're willing to do that work on themselves every day. Because I want to be able to be proud of all of the students that I, you know, send out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Great.
You know, and I guess the same could go then for what I'm talking about with the Healing Center is having training that's, you know, principles based.
Right.
And I think training is going to be a big piece of it, of wanting to not just, because I wouldn't be in it just to sell a package, but my goal is to actually get the training, the information, the skills out there for people to be successful in
right.
a heart-centered business kind of way.
Right. Well, it's a good dream.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
It's
we'll see
wonderful.
Where it goes. Maybe it'll take me somewhere else.
Right, exactly. And that's the nature of the path.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Joanna, for your wonderful sharing. It's been very stimulating.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome. This is Phyllis Muramoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.